On today's episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast, we're talking about cake. And you had me at cake. I'm in. We're chatting with the one and the only Becky Ray. I think you're going to like this one. Let's jump right on in. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at The Hop Nerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. Welcome back. If you've been hanging around these parts for more than a minute, I'm glad to see you back here, a part of this conversation. And if you're brand new here, hello, howdy, hi, this is the Hop Nerd Podcast. My name is Sam Goodman. I'm the creator, the host, the producer of the Hop Nerd Podcast, along with being the consultant. That term always gives me ick. The hop practitioner, the helping hand at the Hop Nerd LLC, along with being the founder and creator of Starting Points, Operationally Curious Questions. And speaking of which, if you haven't checked these things out, go look at them. TheHopNerd.com/SP. TheHopNerd.com/SP, as in Starting Points. If you haven't taken a little peek at these, go check them out, because these things are in the hands of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of employees, people like you and me, around the globe. And there's a good reason for that. The good reason is that they freaking work. That's always the best reason. Yeah, they work. They're not complicated. They're handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy. You don't have to have like 14 days of training to use these things. People like them. They love them. They've got to have more of them because they're simple. There's no checkbox. There's no Scantron sheet to bubble in and then turn into the safety department or the quality department or to your leader. There's no stupid card you have to wear on some dumb lanyard around your neck. No, it's just a card deck full of operationally curious conversation starters. When you put these in your folks' hands, or I would encourage you, go grab a card deck just for yourself. Go out into your organization. Go into teach me, show me mode. You know what we're talking about. Can you teach me? Can you show me? Walk me through this. Pick one of those random cards out of that deck, or shuffle them out, fan them out, and pick one that really piques your curiosity. And spend your day having operationally curious conversations, starting with that question, and see where you end up. Yeah, you're going to discover what hundreds of organizations have already discovered, that these things stink and work. The reason why we developed and rolled out Starting Points is I kept hearing from leaders, a ton of leaders, like a lot of leaders, that, hey, learning teams are cool. I like those things. Yeah, that's great. Hey, you know, we've actually even gotten really good at our post-event learning review accident investigation. Yeah, we've gotten pretty good at that. Yeah, we've kind of redone our approach to RCA, and we're using that in certain places, and it works well for us. We're using this combination of tools and using HOP as our lens, right? Our beliefs and ideas that sit behind said tools, which in fact, we use said tools. We're doing good with all this stuff, but we're struggling. We kind of have to wait till we've got maybe not a super loud signal, but a bit of a louder signal than what we'd like to learn and improve. I know that there's something to be learned out there and something that we could uncover, discover with those nearest to the work, and we could come up with some great ideas on how to improve that. Does that always take two meetings with some soak time? Nope, it doesn't. No, of course it doesn't. Well, how do I do that? You go do it. And give me a place to start. I don't need a form. I don't need a checklist. This tool was built with folks like leaders and safety practitioners, food safety technicians, food safety managers, quality technicians, frontline employees, frontline leaders, executives. The list goes on. This was built with those folks for those folks. These things were made for us around this idea of how do we have a simple way, just a very simple, informal way to build operational curiosity, learning, improvement, and sometimes even innovation, into our day-to-day work. That's Starting Points. Yeah, so go check those out at thehopner.com/SP. You can discover our original card decks along with our learning journals, and the list continues to grow almost every single day of organizations that work with us to license Starting Points. Because the great thing there is you can put them in your color scheme. Yeah, you can put your cool logo on there. We could work together to make them yours, to customize questions and on, to truly make them yours, to bake them that much farther into your organization's day-to-day. All of that can be found at thehopnerd.com/SP, or if you're just straight up interested in licensing stuff, reach out to me at thehopnerd@gmail.com. And speaking of thehopnerd@gmail.com, if you need a hand on your hop journey, there are a lot of great folks out there, a ton of them. One of them we're going to have on the podcast today. But if you do need that hand, I'm your person. Ding, 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 ding. Party horn, party horn. Yeah, okay. I know I've overdone the party horn in the recent episodes, but I get excited about this idea of coming out and helping you and your organization with your hop journey. It is quite literally my passion and my life's work, helping you and your organization. So if you're looking for that person that is passionate, that is flexible, that is here to help you, that has been down in those trenches, in the muck, in the mud, internal to organizations, I've been there, just like you're there. I know, and I can help. There you go, thehopnerd@gmail.com. Last but not least, there's a ton of resources over on the website. Those are all absolutely free, including all those funny videos that I make. So if you go to thehopnerd.com and you click on resources, there's a little video player up there. There's some confusion around how to download those. You just kind of go to the video that you're watching. It's got that little like three dot something off to the side. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, it's just a little button that says download. Use them. Put them to good use out there in your work world and beyond. If you like them, you love them, and you want to repost them, download it and post it. Yeah, tag me if you can. That's always helpful. And speaking of which, like, share, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating here if you read the books and you love the books. I know many of you have. Go leave us a 5-star review. All that stuff helps us more than you could ever imagine. So with all of our little bit of announcements out of the way, let's jump right on in to this awesome conversation with Becky Ray. Podcast. Are you excited?
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about?
Anything you want. I'm open.
Yeah.
Let's just see where it goes.
That's what I like to do. That's kind of how we do it. Maybe let's start right here. And for folks that maybe don't know you, could you tell folks who you are, what you do, your background, kind of who is Becky? Let's maybe start there.
Sure. So my name is Becky Ray, and you can tell by my awesome accent that I'm from the UK. From a little place called Bristol, which sits nicely between kind of England and Wales. There's a bit of river that comes up for us, so we're on the coast. We can get to the beach pretty easy. So my background is I started life as an engineer. I used to fix forklift trucks and big earth moving equipment for a big company called Caterpillar, which I know you've got in the US.
Never heard of, no.
So I had a van, I had a Snap-on 9-drawer toolbox, I had rigger boots, I used to drive around, I used to fix stuff that was broken. And it only makes sense when you look back, but it means I've soaked up a lot of culture, a lot of what are the components that you need to set people to work effectively in those kind of fast-paced, high-risk, dynamic operational settings. And typically when I arrived, something was broken. So some part of their operations was stopped or paused, and obviously there was a backlog of stuff, and people were a bit like angst and a bit stressy. And I got really good at being like a real calming effect, which has obviously enabled me to be kind of the leader I am today.
Yeah.
I did that for 10 years, and then I kind of got like, oh, there's a lot of lying around in puddles when you're fixing stuff. And so I was like, what can I do next? So I got into health and safety because we did a lot of big jobs that needed like lifting plans, and we were cutting stuff up. So I got into like lifting plans and risk assessments and safety systems work. And I thought I could do this, surely. So I retrained as a health and safety professional. And again, did that weirdly for exactly 10 years. In rail, construction, so like bridges, tunnels, that kind of stuff, big civil engineering infrastructure projects. So again, throw a whole bunch of people together, to do high-risk work in a tiny window of time. Bit of military aviation, manufacturing, utilities, those kinds of spaces. And I was always part of the operational team, and I really wanted to embed myself with the doers of the business, because that's where I felt really comfortable. And I always wanted to find the sweet spot between, let's get this big, scary, dangerous thing done, because that's what the business wants, but let's do it actually and not kill anyone and not maim anyone, and actually people feel good about what they're doing. So again, I soaked up all the culture parts of that. Loved safety, loved what it was trying to do, but now I've kind of moved to the other side where I really focus on the people elements, the leadership elements, and the real bit about setting people up for successful work, because we can do these big, dangerous things, and there is a sweet spot for getting it right. So now my business is called Culture Kick. Obviously, you're a hop nerd. Hop is a massive flavour and influence to all the work I do. And now I support sort of leaders, organizations, teams to better set themselves up to improve their culture. And you improve their culture by this operationally focused culture change, which pulls on HOP, pulls on safety differently, pulls on my experience as a frontline worker, as an engineer, and as a health and safety kind of leader in that space. So hopefully that's enough to give you a flavor of who I am.
No, I think that's... that's a phenomenal story. So a couple of things that I want to highlight there. I love how you described that, this idea of pulling from HOP, pulling from here, pulling from there. I find that, and maybe it was poor naming on my part, I don't know. I like the HOP name. I'm sticking with it. Nobody's sticking with it. But I find myself personally explaining that a lot of times, that those five principles, it's the bedrock of what we do a lot. But it's not just those five principles.
It's all the stuff that fits around it, right?
Yeah. When I think about this stuff, I think about it as more of a buffet, right? I mean, and as I'm sure you experience, I'm sure you experience with businesses. Okay, we've got these core five principles, and we're going to spend time talking about how that actually works. Yeah. In real life, but it doesn't just begin and end there.
Yeah.
There's not only a ton of other great stuff out there that you should probably use if it makes sense and it fits in here, but you should actively be innovating and creating on top of that kind of foundation. Yeah. And it leads me to the other point that you said, which I find incredibly interesting, from safety practitioner to safety practitioner. That was my background too, before I grew into this and realized, wait a second, there's a lot more to this than just that. But I love what you said around this idea of, instead of being the person that always says no, our role is to enable success.
That's what I didn't like about that title.
Yeah, I always hated that.
No,
right?
Girl. Like, I don't want to be the fun sucker.
We've got this really cool thing and we're going to do it like this. Check this out. We did all this planning. No. Well, why not? Because it scares me. And I always love that when we hear that conversation move from, in a more extreme sense, the safety police, and and maybe in even more extreme sense, the fun police.
Nobody likes the safety person, do they, typically? No. If you're in a bar and someone goes, what do you do for a living? And you're like, oh, I'm health and safety. They're like, see you then.
Well, you're not allowed, are you? That's probably a good test for you, safety folks out there listening. If you get invited to the bar after work with the ops folks, you're probably doing something right. But it is. It's enabling success. And as you described with your business, you're just going on a broader scale, it sounds like, of enabling organizations to be successful.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying, because all my stuff is flavored with HOP, and I've been a firm believer in what HOP's trying to do for ages. Yeah. And some clients have specifically come to me and gone, we want a HOP program, we've heard about HOP, can you build us something? And I've gone, yeah, sure, if that's what you want, let's do it. But I've gone to brand new clients, and if they've never heard of HOP, it's actually quite a hard sell, because it feels quite abstract. But if I say culture, workplace culture, like how you do stuff around here, and all my stuff is operationally focused, because typically that's the organizations I work with. So they get health and safety. They've already got a solid health and safety team, but they're like, We just want to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
If I talk about culture, which is a really broad term in itself, they're like, oh, yeah, get it. I can wrap my head around culture. And I come in with my specific flavor of culture, which is a cake, by the way.
Yeah, we're going to get there. We're going to get to that cake.
And hop is in
you
that.
You had me at cake.
Of course, hop is in that, but actually it's easier for me to explain that to people that have not heard about hop, but equally they're open to doing things differently. And have you found that if you're speaking to a client or a leader that doesn't know hop, how easy or hard is it to say what it is?
Yeah. So for me personally, I'm with you. So I kind of run a mixed bag of folks that I work with as well, from the brand new to the brand new. To folks, those organizations where there's that one person that wants to go down this path of trying to do things differently. And it's, okay, we've got to teach everyone else kind of what this stuff is. To folks that are coming more from maybe that more traditional HP space, and they've done a lot of great work around human, like the more standard DOE style human performance, and they want to grow that. I find that I tend to not talk about HOP. And what I mean by that is those principles are baked deeply into the messages that I share and the conversations that I have and the strategies that we talk about. And we eventually get to, hey, here are these five principles. But just as a presentation, I've got one pulled up here that I've been working on for a thing coming up. The actual slide that's like five principles, it's at the very end. Like we're going to talk about this stuff more broadly before we ever get to that idea of the principles. Because I find that the principles are highly useful. Because they're five principles, and you read them, and they're easy to understand.
The downside, you can add leverage into it, can't you?
Exactly. But the downside of those five principles, especially if you maybe reveal them first, and just using a presentation as an example, people tend to say, well, five principles, that's it. Okay, got it. I just do those things.
Let's go.
Well, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. And that's a lot of the knock maybe that HOP gets these days, is that some folks do just say, hey, five principles, do these, you're good. As you and I know, that's the story's never that simple.
And I think a lot of people get good intentions going, right, I've heard good things about HOP. We want to do HOP.
Yeah.
And the way they do HOP is to train everybody with a simple, this is the five principles. Have you got it? Have you written them down? Have you got them on mouse mats? Let's print them on the walls. Let's give you a credit card to stick in your pocket with them.
Yeah.
And then they don't live them.
Right.
So they took, so that's almost like formalizing HOP because you've had some kind of rollout with jazz hands.
Balloons.
But you want to normalize HOP. Yeah. And so that every conversation you're having is just in there because you have to change your view on the world, don't you? To live and breathe.
That's it. Are you looking for a handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show.
Me, and maybe to even add to some of that more broader view of this approach, to the way that I even define HOP, at least with the organizations that I spend time with, the way the HOP Nerd LLC defines HOP, is around this idea of these are not just these five principles. It's a collection. Right? It's a collection of these better beliefs, ideas, and assumptions from diverse and varying sources that we apply through the lens of those five principles. That's those core five principles. But I always add on kind of this dot, dot, dot that helps us create an environment in which operational learning is possible. Yeah. Right? To get to maybe the result of why those five principles matter so much, you know, because if I really zoom out, that's really where we're going, right? When we're talking HOP culture or this, especially around the things that we tend to do, what we're really focusing on is creating an environment where people can tell us the truth.
Yeah.
That's really it. Even when that operational truth is inconvenient, scary, yeah. weird.
Yeah.
People can tell us the truth. Because organizations that go down this path with good intentions and for the right reasons, doing good work, doing it for the right reasons, that's what they're trying to gain access to. They're trying to gain access to better operational information that will help them better care for their employees through innovation, learning, improvement. So I really like this more broad view.
Yeah.
I don't really subscribe to the idea with anything that there's one right way to do things.
And that's why I liked your buffet analogy. And I also use that. I see my job as bringing to my client, whoever they are, whatever they're doing, a whole buffet of ideas that I've taken from other organizations, because I have the beauty of going into lots of businesses and I pick out the best bits and learning and the best bits from all the books and all the podcasts and all the other people doing great stuff in the space, and just go, here's a buffet of stuff. You pick the bit that looks good to you. Don't just pick the sausage rolls. Mm-hmm. Have a bit of that and a bit of that and a bit of that, and then go off and try it. And the most successful interventions I have with clients is where I get to do both. So I get to offer up that buffet. They pick some bits, they go off and try it, and then they come back to me and I go, hey, how'd you get on? What worked? What didn't? What did you learn? What are you going to go and try next? And so I like it when I can be with a client for a good 6 months, and I've got a program where I do like 6 workshops and then 6 group coaching with a small team of operational leaders. I offer them the buffet. They choose some bits, go off, try it, come back to me. How'd you get on? I hold them accountable. Otherwise, people just go back to their day jobs because they got busy day jobs and they just do the doing again.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do culture change. You can't do HOP in one go. And if you think that, you're totally kidding yourself. It's got to be a bit of that, a bit of that, a bit of that. That didn't work at all. Try that.
Well, there's a really important point to be made there. And I'd be curious as to what your experience with this is. I find that most of the time clients that I work with, they show up with a bit of an understanding of what we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And they show up with this pretty good understanding that I might not quite get all this stuff deeply, but I understand. I know where we're at and I know where we want to go. And I'm here for that. Let's figure this thing out. You help us, but we're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Every now and again, though, and this is where I tend to see this stuff fall flat on its face, you run across folks that are looking for like the secret handshake.
Yeah.
Or like the silver bullet, like the chest bump, or as I get older, maybe the belly bump.
Chunk of money, you go fix this.
Just go fix it.
Go and do that hop thing over there.
This is going to be fast. It's going to be fast. We're going to try to roll this thing out like we've rolled out everything else, where we print the card.
Yeah.
Write a rule that says you got to wear it around your neck. We're going to stand outside at the turnstile with balloons and pastries and hot coffee in the morning. And we're going to develop a character called Hop Man that wears a costume and dances when you come in the gate. And
I've not seen Hop Man yet, but I want to meet him.
No, yeah. It's been in the back of my mind for, you know, these stupid, wacky videos I've been.
Yeah, I love it.
But it's that, right? And I think there's a real power in what you said, though, this understanding that there are a lot of great folks out there that can help you. But the work is yours.
Yes.
And the work can be hard. It is hard. Yeah. And the work can be challenging because it never moves as fast as what you would hope that it would move. And you have to accept that for what it is.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that when we're really talking about really deep changes within our organizations, it's always going to move
beliefs,
slow.
Right? Yeah. We're changing beliefs. And I love that you called these principles better beliefs, because they are better than what some leaders currently believe about leadership, about safety, about how we set people to work. And you cannot change somebody's belief in one workshop. And I can deliver a banging workshop, I'm not going to lie, but I can't change everybody in the room's beliefs after one go.
No, well, and I describe this a lot of times, and back to maybe folks that we work with that get it. And it's maybe a good test for folks out there that maybe do things that we do. But I always share with folks, like, this is your first workshop. We're going to go pretty deep into this stuff. And we're going to have some really meaningful conversations along the way. And it's going to, some of it maybe be challenging and scary. And some of it's going to feel natural. The output of this, a lot of times at that first touch point, my goal, I really want people sometimes leaving with more questions than answers.
Yeah.
I want them leaving intrigued, curious, and saying something along the lines of, yeah, you know, that crazy guy from Phoenix. I get this and this. And that thing, though, it makes sense, but I don't quite, I'm going to go research this and dig into this and think on this. And
but that guy, at least he's talking. My favorite guy in a workshop is the person at the back with their arms folded. Like really loud grunting. And then you ask them, and they're like, oh, this mumbo jumbo, come in with your modern and progressive pink and fluffy ideas. Yeah. And I love that guy, Worm, because he's easier to kind of sow the seeds to, because he's open enough to tell me he's not game for it.
Yeah.
It's the silent ones that just sneak off and don't say anything.
Yeah.
The guy that's openly resistant, I can work with him.
Yeah. They're engaged.
And I love to have a little secret challenge to go, that's the guy I want to turn.
Yeah.
slowly.
Those folks that when you get done, everybody leaves and they're still sitting in their chair.
Yeah.
Waiting on you. And you know,
they're like, this sounds good, but it's not going to work here, though.
You know,
because tell me more.
They want to have some conversation with you after this because you're crazy.
Yeah. Right? I love somebody who's outwardly resistant.
Yeah.
They're engaged all day long.
I would much rather have resistant and engaged, or totally opposed and engaged, than thank you for your time. That was great. As you said, you know, those folks usually that are just going to go and walk, they are just completely shut down on the idea.
Yeah.
They're harder to break through to a lot of times because of that. There's just no openness to maybe much new of anything kind of in that world. Yeah. Yeah.
And the other analogy I love that I can't claim it's my own, but I've stolen it now, is I would describe it as like stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. So we're old enough to be able to think back 5, 10, 20 years. The jokes that were getting laughs 10, 20 years ago, they're not funny today, are they?
Right. Yeah.
You can carry on telling those jokes. Mm-hmm. You might get a few laughs and giggles from the back, but they're just not going to land with people. It's the same with your approach to leadership. Whatever. We know that traditional dictatorial leadership did work and still works now to some extent, but it's not going to get you and your business and your team to where you want to go in this thriving culture, this innovative, because people have to adapt on the fly now, even more so than they used to do. And so I say, and I'm typically working with maybe groups of people that are maybe 10, if not more, years older than me. Mm-hmm. And so they've been leading a certain way for this time. And they're probably leading the way that their boss led them. And that's what they got reference point. And they're like, well, this works for me then, it works for me now. But it's like, your jokes aren't funny.
Yeah.
This style of leadership's not going to fly when you get a younger generation. You get a 20-year-old in, it's not going to land.
Well, so some of those jokes nowadays would quite literally get you unemployed, and for good reason.
Yeah.
We learned that that's probably not the best the best path forward. Similar to those,
people stuck in the past, aren't they? Stuck in what did work.
Well, and I think there's logical reason for that. I'm not going to call it good reason, but there's logical reason for that. And what I find, especially with the executives that I work with, and maybe devoid of age so much, because I work with some pretty young executives too, that came up in a system similar to what you described, where my boss did it this way, and their boss did it this way, and on and on and on and on. And I've figured out a way to generate success this way. Maybe not so much for the people at the sharp end,
but
if my measure of success is climbing the organizational ladder, I am the senior vice president of all this now, and I got here doing it that way.
Yeah.
And now, Becky, you're coming in and telling me that some of that might have been not great.
Yeah.
But I think when you really get them to connect to that story of like, but this got you here.
Yeah.
But if you want to go there, you're not going to get there doing all those old bits that you used to do that used to get laughs in 74. Yeah. It's just not going to work that way anymore. Yeah. And in fact, I mean, if you really, really, really get them to understand that with more operational information, you can be a better leader.
Yeah.
That's always a huge turning point for me. I share that usually early on in many conversations that I have with especially leaders around HOP, is that damn good leaders need damn good information.
Yeah.
And there's not much else that I really needed as a leader other than good information to make good decisions, because I don't like guessing. And anything that gets in the way of me gaining access to that vitally needed operational information, it's obviously bad for them. Yeah. And it's obviously bad for the organization. But it's bad for me and any upward mobility even that I might be looking forward to. Because without that information, I can't make good decisions.
Yeah.
And so I always try to bring them full circle on this idea that, you know, when we lead through these principles, when we lead through these better beliefs and assumptions, maybe to some of our point earlier, that to me, human and organizational performance in particular isn't so much about what we do, it's how we think about things that then in turn influences what we do, the tactics, the approaches that we use, that we take. When we can connect those dots, it seems like for them, and get them to understand that with more operational intelligence, they can be a more intelligent leader.
Yeah.
That's a huge turning point for maybe some of those folks that, no knife in this, but we would have maybe referred to dinosaurs, you know, in the past, folks that were going extinct fast.
We're not, and I don't mean to blame them, and I'm not even trying to judge them.
No, there's no blame, no judgment.
I'm just trying to say they're doing the best they can, given the information they had and the experience that they had. And actually, you're right. It's been pretty successful up till now, but if they want to go from good to great to like to awesome, they've got to change something. And it's businesses having the appetite to go, what got me, like you said, what got me here is not going to get me there. So I've got to do something different. And I think there's still this myth around, oh, people don't like change. Of course they don't. No, they don't like change being done to them. They want to be part of the change. And they've got some really good ideas and really good information to help you to know where that change should take you. Yeah, so people want to do stuff quick and efficient and safe. People want to get stuff done well.
Yeah.
Let's lean on that.
Especially with this idea of change that you mentioned. You know, when you do change to me, I'm the victim.
Mm-hmm.
When you do change with me, I'm the innovator. Right. Yeah. And I don't want to be the victim. I want to be the doer. I want to be the innovator. And when you actively involve me and we do this stuff with each other rather than trying to do it to each other.
Yeah.
That's a huge turning point. Right. I mean, that's a massive difference than maybe how we've approached things in the past. You said something that's near and dear to my heart. And because I find, especially with the hot principle around blame, that we get really, 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 really good at maybe understanding that blame doesn't work so well in our organizations. Right. Not to unpack this conversation, because there's a big difference, as we know, right, between maybe what the internet says we mean by that and what that actually means in real life and practice.
Yeah.
The internet will tell you that that means that we just allow people to like burn our stuff down on purpose and that people can just, but that's obviously not the case. But we get really, really good at maybe not applying blame towards the sharp end of our organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And then an organization will come along and say, look how great we are at not applying blame, to then only tell you how great they are at now blaming their leaders.
Yeah.
And I was writing on this thing, I was writing right along, and I was thinking about this idea. And what kind of struck me as important to say here, because I have to share this with organizations all the time, that leaders are people too, which sounds like the stupidest thing ever that you would have to say that. But sometimes we lose sight of that, that our leaders are not superheroes, that they are not these all-knowing, unique beings, any different than anyone else in our organization. And where I'm going towards is what you said. Something that struck me as important to continue to say is that leaders, good leaders, sometimes great leaders, lead and live up to poor expectations within their organizations every day. They lead with poor assumptions nearly every day. And just like our employees nearest to the sharp end, they still mostly get it right.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important thing to understand with our leaders that even in those situations where maybe they don't have the best of assumptions, maybe they've got some maybe not great ideas about the folks that reside in different areas of their organization, maybe the organization puts out these wacky and wonky expectations on them that drive them farther down a path that's not as helpful to the organization.
Yeah.
And they still mostly get it right. Even with all that, people are great at still mostly getting it right.
Yeah.
Our leaders
too. I always think about, so my favorite level of leadership to work with, I call them operational leaders, but they're like supervisors, team leaders, operations manager, general manager, you know, that level. So they're the people that are close to the bulk of the workforce that set them up either for success or to fail. But then they've got the ear of the senior team.
Mm-hmm.
So they understand the direction and where the business is going, but they're kind of stuck in this middle bit. And let's say one of them is called like John, right? So John is a decent, solid guy. John turns up every day, does a great job at the technical thing that the business does. And they're like, right, John, you're a solid guy. You're now a supervisor and you're now supervising 10 people. And John's like, oh, that's a win. I get a bigger paycheck. I'm climbing the ladder. It feels really good. John's now managing 10 people. He's doing the best he can, given the information and resources he's got. And John's now been doing this for 10 years. Nobody has gone, oh, let's give John some leadership skills
or development
or give him a hand of how to make decisions and resource plan and all this stuff. John is still a solid, decent guy. We love John.
Yeah.
But actually, John is floundering a bit now. And that's typically the level of leadership I love the most, because I've got so much empathy for him.
Same.
They're getting forgotten. But the guy, John's boss, they sent him on an MBA. They sent him on an academic qualification to be an awesome exec, and he understands finance and planning and all this stuff now, and he's a great boss. But nobody did anything for John, and I feel like that layer gets lost and unforgotten, and they don't get that much of a bigger paycheck for that level of responsibility. And actually, they've still got a day job. They're probably still a working supervisor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's where I've got all my empathy for, is John. It's all the Johns.
I'm with you. Because similar to you, I came up in a similar fashion. Started with these.
Yeah.
in the mud. And I remember that first leadership job, the frontline leadership job, where they're like, hey, we'll give you a dollar more an hour.
Yes. Whole dollar.
I'm like, that sounds good. I like dollars.
Yeah.
I work 12 hours a day. That's an extra 12 hours. That's an extra $12. That's pretty good. That's not bad. I like this idea. And to your point, though, I think a lot of organizations do really, really good at trying to promote from within, which I think is a positive, right?
Yes.
We've all been there when the outsider comes and you're like, but I've been here for...
Yeah. I think you need a bit of both. I think an outside perspective.
Absolutely.
Can shake stuff up and get you to look at different ways. But again, absolutely, if you work there, if you're a solid guy, you turn up, you do the best you can, you should have a route for progression if that's where you want to go.
A path forward in the organization, a clear path forward, tends to, with a lot of other things, but it's a piece of it, tends to help people stay in organization. Yeah. Most people don't want to feel like they're stuck, kind of spinning their wheels and never moving forward. And so I think at least the organizations I spend time with, my limited worldview, most are pretty good at what we just described. Of course, we're hiring some people from the outside. Of course, we're promoting from the inside. There's a very clear path to that. But the mechanism that we tend to use is the one that you just described, which I don't know is always the best mechanism. It sounds something like, hey, you're the best at driving fork trucks. Mm-hmm. And you've been driving fork trucks for a really long time. Now, you are the king or queen of driving fork trucks. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to take you and we'll give you 3 days of leadership boot camp. Mm-hmm. We're going to set you up for success. And what we do over those 3 days is I teach you how to fill out disciplinary action reports.
Yeah.
And I teach you how to approve time cards. And I teach you how to feed the data that you need to feed into the Excel spreadsheet that always keeps that box green. I teach you how to do that stuff. But I never really set you up for success. Mm-hmm. Very rarely do I find that organizations set people up for success with truly being a leader of people. Mm-hmm. I set people up a lot of times to be a manager of things. Mm-hmm. You're a great leader of things or a manager of things. But the people side, we tend to maybe, we know that we need to, but we tend to not.
Yeah.
A lot of times. And so John, as an example, I think sometimes, you know, John gets in there and John maybe has a bit of an affinity for this or picked up a lot elsewhere, or as many of us have had, we had really great people that we worked for. Mm-hmm. And maybe they didn't know they were teaching us how to be good leaders, but they were. And maybe we had some really not great ones along the way too. And we definitely learned we weren't going to be like that. And so maybe John had some of that stuff. But another thing that I tend to find frustrating is that we're really good at giving those folks that opportunity. But maybe John gets there and he realizes this isn't for him. Mm-hmm. There's no clear path back.
No, there's no whoop. You can't take a step back, can you?
And if John sincerely raises his hand and says, I don't have a desire to do this. I thought I did. But I want to go back to that. That's a painful negative then for John, because the organization then says, well, John, if you can't cut it as a leader, we're just going to have to let you go. We already filled your job. Yeah. Sorry about this, but, you know, goodbye. There should be another option other than goodbye for John, I guess. Yeah. I guess is what I'm saying.
But again, like, we also, like, let's give John a bit of a hand. Let's give him some little things to go and try. Let's explain, like, what is psychological safety? How do you get people to come up and speak to you? Because you used to be their peer in the tea room, and now you're signing off when they kind of can't have holiday. So
now they look at you different when you walk in the room. They kind of give you the eye when you walk in the room now.
Yeah. So how do you earn that respect, maintain it, but still have that open relationship where they come to you? And like, as we know, there are tangible things you can do and not do to build that speak up culture and earn that trust and respect. And there are things you can do that you lose it in an instant. And again, are we helping John to get his head around this?
Yeah, yeah. Again, I find that I think that a lot of times for people like John, having lived through that situation myself, and you probably have as well, where I got taught how to do time cards.
Yeah.
And I got taught that I need to do this and this and this, and this is how you're going to measure me as a leader. But it never had much to do with the people that I was actually leading. Yeah. Which, to your point, we're not giving someone like John the adequate information or tools that they need to really be successful. And we're just kind of depending on John to figure it out at that point. With very little, if any, support from the organization at that point.
Yeah, and are we also, like, checking in with John? Like, before he gets to the point where it's, actually, this is not for me, like, that wouldn't be an overnight thing. That would be building up for months, or if not years. I also don't think we're going to John and go, hey, John, how are you getting on?
Yeah.
What's working? What's not? What's frustrating you? What are your challenges?
Yeah.
John's boss going, hey, what can I do to best support you? And I feel like we don't really do that.
Yeah.
We're just like, John, your objectives were this, this, and this in regards to production and headcount and maintenance of, I don't know, part of the factory. You've done that. Nice one. Good for you, John.
Yeah. Well, I guess so people won't accuse me of just like moaning and griping about this without maybe giving some bit of an idea about something that you can actually do here. Several organizations that I work with currently, and one that I worked with before, an employer that I would describe as a unicorn employer. And what I mean by that is they mostly got things right. A great place to work.
Yeah.
Right? One of those kind of places. When you would find yourself in leadership, they did what they would call a battle buddy. And this is a large engineering organization, mostly made up of ex-Navy personnel. So battle buddy fit right in with their terminology. That might not work so well in maybe normal work world. Right? But that's what worked for them. And what it basically was is that when you found yourself in that leadership position, they put you through that leadership boot camp. Yep, they helped you with some other stuff, the basic stuff that we described. But one thing that they did really, really well is, especially new leaders, but not just new leaders, they would pair those leaders up with great leaders in the organization, and they became their phone a friend.
Yeah, I love that.
And they would even give them some autonomy in that, some choice of, hey, you know, you've been working here for at least a few minutes. out of all of these leaders, who would you like to maybe try out as a battle buddy? And they could pick. And that person became their go-to. Hey, I'm dealing with this.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how to deal with it. What's your experience? Can you help me with this? And they built in these internal relationships as part of the new leader process and as even ongoing with other leaders to be able to have conversations with folks. Because I find with leaders a lot of times, and this is for our safety pro friends out there too, become that phone a friend, not just for safety stuff, but especially if you're out there actively trying to lead some of the changes that we're talking about, be the person that picks up the phone.
Yeah.
Be the person that they know when they really want to freak out and like scream at people, they can call you.
Yeah.
And you can have that conversation about how that's probably not so effective in this particular case.
Yeah.
But also, just that call helps.
A safe space to have a bit of a rant.
Exactly.
Because it makes sense to have a rant to a safe space and then get it out and then go, right, what can I do about this? And then can I lean on your experience of a similar situation?
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, I'm going to do that in front of my team. And I get why some supervisors then do that, but what does that do to motivate your team if you're the boss going, oh, this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
Like, you're running around being frustrated. And that's why one of the layers of my cake is frustrations into focus. If there's something frustrating you, and it will happen, nobody's immune from it, let's work out what it is and put a focus on it. Because you either want to remove it, you want to reduce it, or you want to reframe it. Mm-hmm. And that's what they would get from those buddies. They might have a trick or a thing they can do to change it. But actually, sometimes we need someone else's perspective to help us reframe something. And then we're like, ah, right, okay.
Yeah.
Get it now. It's not that much of a big deal. But in the moment when we're emotionally reacting,
yeah,
we need that safe space. So I love what you're saying, because it's almost different from a mentor scheme, which I love mentor schemes. Yeah. But sometimes they can feel a bit formal.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is like, I'm just picking up the phone because something's gone wrong and I need to just go, because we know that we're supposed to respond, not react. But when we've got those emotions, and we're human beings, we're supposed to have emotions, where can I safely go,
Yeah.
And then find some clarity.
Yeah. Well, especially when we find ourselves in those positions that, you know, are scary, weird, strange, triggering that part of our brain, fight, flight, fawn, right? We're going to fall into that thing. And I know that I talk about it. I know you talk about it. A lot of us talk about it, this power of a pause, right? To have a bit of a stop point for pressure relief, for thinking, for pondering, for, hey, wait a second. You know, the way I describe this to people is like, if you've ever gotten an email or had to send an email where you're really upset and you write that email in the immediate, deep into that upset, frustration, anger, and then you do that thing where you walk away from it, and then you come back and you reread it, and you say, I'm an idiot.
Like, no, but you're not. If you didn't press send, you're a winner.
Yeah.
If you smash on the send button, it's gone.
Exactly. But
you can't take that back, can you?
That bit of a gap, as we describe a lot of times, as a bit of a pressure relief, a bit of thinking time, a bit of just to process and calm down. That battle buddy kind of structure helps with some of that too, because when I'm really frustrated, as you were kind of pointing us towards, just the ability to call someone and say, this is going on, and the world is run by idiots, right? I don't know. That thing, just to get that out in the open and then go, okay, you're done. Okay, let's talk about how we can move forward. I've seen this happen not only with leader to leader, but just peer to peer situations as well. An organization that I've been working with, they do that with a lot of their operators, and more specifically around lockout, tagout for problem solving. It's like, hey, you have this open phone line to not just an ops department somewhere else, but to a person that lives in that ops department. And when you come across this thing where you go, huh, this is new, unique, different. We've never had to isolate this in this particular configuration. I don't know how to do this. You have someone that you can call not only for input, but technical advice, bounce ideas off of, tell me I'm not crazy kind of situation, or please tell me that I am crazy because I want to make sure we get this right. Having those specific people pre-designated, those relationships pre-built, it's a powerful thing because we always say, I think it's backing up some of what we always say. We always say, well, if you need help, call who?
Speak up. If you've got a problem, speak up. But give me a path to make it easy.
Another
addition to that, which again, especially in larger organizations where you've got like the doers who do the stuff, and then you've got the people typically in offices that plan and manage that stuff, is having people, you want to help people build relationships so that you get out of this silo. So I always love it when we go, right, I want someone in finance to be the caller or the go-to person for this person in ops. And I want this person on the shop floor to go and make friends. You get to choose who they are, but you're going to make a friend in the planning department. And so that's how you build that kind of shared empathy and compassion.
Yeah.
To then start to slowly break down that them and us culture. Mm-hmm. So they're not like, oh, we do all the hard work and we're like at the front of it here and everyone in there is like having an office party or whatever. Start doing it cross-department as well.
Cross-department, yeah, because we see that play out a lot. I don't know what your experience is with this, but some places I go, sometimes shop-to-shop, trade-to-trade, those relationships can sometimes be a little strained.
Yeah.
Ops are always complaining about maintenance, and maintenance is always complaining about ops, right? But if I genuinely know Jane over in ops, and Jane genuinely knows Joe over in maintenance— it's really, really hard for those misunderstandings to kind of fester if I actually have a bit of a structure And I actually know who that person is. And I know that I can call them because ops usually has a lot of maintenance questions. And maintenance usually has a lot of ops questions.
Well, they can't just function without each other.
They can't. Yeah. As much as maybe they don't want to admit that. They are dependent on one another for success, right?
Yeah, because I've been working with a steel manufacturer. So they put like coatings on steel products to make all kinds of things in the construction world. And there's naturally a commercial team full of like salespeople that go out and sell these products everywhere.
Yeah.
And then they write in simple terms like a job instruction saying, I want this product made this way, this quantity for this client. And then on the work instruction, it tells them all that information. That then goes to the shop floor and then they make it. And there was a real like problem that kept coming up with these job cards. And they were like, they're wrong. The salespeople this and the salespeople that and all the explicits.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, can you work out why it's wrong? And then take that, to literally take that piece of paper up, because they're only like up there. Take it up to the sales team and go, hey, can we have a chat about this? Because the impact on the shop floor is, if they didn't spot it, they didn't catch that error, they'd make the product and there'd be thousands and thousands of pounds of wasted product, wasted time. But I said, your team are really good at catching these errors, which is awesome. What we want to do now is close the loop. So go and show these to the salespeople and say, look, the impact of this error, which I know you didn't mean to make, but this error has meant like £60,000 worth of product wrong. And that's the client that you just sold to. So that information is valuable to me as a salesperson because I've got the relationship with the client I've sold the wrong product to. And then actually they kept doing that and then it slowly broke down that friction between the commercial guys and the shop floor guys. And now there's not a them and us.
Yeah.
And actually now they're starting to catch some of their own errors because they didn't know they were doing it.
No.
Because no one had ever gone to them before.
Yeah, I find that all the time, right? I'm sure you do too. Where it's like sometimes we quite literally sit across the hall from each other. We might share a cubicle wall. And the only way that we're communicating, if at all, is through email. Yeah. And I could quite literally just stand up and say, hey, we messed this one up. Look, how can we figure this out? And for whatever reason, that barrier has existed. And breaking down that barrier, building that relationship, is a massive part of our success. Right? We know that as people that – you know, if I already have greased the gears with that relationship, if I've already got even just a little bit of that in place, it's far easier. Even if I've just made that contact or have that name that I can call, it's far easier for me to pick up the phone or walk across the hall when I say, oh, I know Becky. I've talked to Becky before. I'm going to talk to Becky about this. We'll figure this out. Mm-hmm. Versus the silence, that kind of gap of silence that maybe has existed in the past.
Yeah, or just it's much grumbling, harder for me to go like, say, oh, the sales team again has done that thing. Oh, and it's caused this.
And it's like, pesky salespeople. Hey, well, who?
Help. Part of the solution.
And just having some of that already in place and growing some of that beforehand, it makes it far easier because I don't have to walk across the hall and go, I don't know anybody in the sales team.
Yeah.
Or I've got to go talk to Becky and I don't know Becky. So now I've got to go meet Becky. And then the first thing out of my mouth is going to be a problem. And then Becky's going to hate me. And all the other assumptions that we put into place in the gap of that relationship. Right.
Yeah.
We've been going for more than a minute. And so I want to ask you, you described one of the elements of it, but you had me at cake.
Okay.
So what the heck is a culture cake?
Okay. So I wanted a framework, same way as the five principles of Harper, like the anchor to what it's about. I wanted a similar kind of anchor framework. And I knew that to be a successful business, you need a framework. But I just thought it was a bit corporate, a bit bland, a bit boring. So I was like, what can I put these layers in? And I worked out what the layers were. So I was like, what can I have that's got layers? And I thought a lasagna. But I often take my cake to like speaking gigs I do, and a lasagna just didn't compute the same way. So I love yellow, I love bright colours, so I chose a rainbow layer cake with sprinkles on top, just so that's my thing now, and it's my thing. So the five layers are, and you'll easily relate to these from a hot perspective, the first one is make it easy. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're asking people to do, they're the experts at it. Make it easy for them to get up, get to work, and do their thing. So make it easy. And that incorporates all the stuff around human error, context-wise behavior, all that good stuff. The second one is speak up, which again, I like to simplify terms. Psychological safety is great if you know what it is, but otherwise it's a bit academic sounding.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We want to create a culture where people can speak up for all the beautiful reasons we know why. The third one, and this is my favorite one, is frustrations into focus. If I'm frustrated at work, I cannot and will not do my best work. That's bad for me. It's bad for my team, and it's bad for whatever the business is trying to achieve. So I need to put a focus on my own frustrations. And leaders, your sole job, in my opinion, is to find out what's frustrating people in your team, because these are things that are getting in the way of your people doing a great job. Find out what they are and do one of three things. Remove it. If you can get rid of that, get rid of it. Sometimes there's way too many layers of stuff getting in the way. Get rid of it. If you can't remove it, reduce it in some way. Reduce the exposure to it. Reduce how much stuff's around it. And if you can't reduce it, then reframe it. And this one is so simple yet so powerful. If say, Sandra is really frustrated about this part of the process. She's like, I don't see the point in it. It gets in my way. I fill out all this data. Nothing happens with it. And then I'm Sandra's lead. And I go, oh, but you didn't know that Sam over there in production uses that information for the client to package this up. And you're like, oh, I didn't know that. I now know it's really important. We can't remove it, but I can now see the bigger picture. I've reframed that thing that was getting in my way because I see how it adds value. And sometimes we can only see the little bit of the business we've got.
Yeah.
So work out what those frustrations are, put a focus on it. And then the last two were all about learning. So learning from failure, because your business is going to fail, whether you want it or not. None of this zero nonsense. We're going to fail and we're going to continue to fail. So we might as well learn from it and suck up all that goodness.
Yeah.
And then everyday learning, because like you said, there's so much operational knowledge that's spinning around. Rather than wait for your next failure, suck up that goodness now and inject it into your next project, your next piece of work. So that's the five layers of the cake. It's rainbow. It's the best culture change in town.
I love it. Tasting. So the only thing that I would encourage you here is that I love the cake. But if you can then also come up with a lasagna.
Okay.
You can then show up with a main course and a dessert.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's a message, right? No, I absolutely, absolutely love it. And all of that resonates very, very deeply with me. And I can just see kind of how that would play out. And the first thing that pops to my mind, just as a wacky example, is that compliant something, right? The thing that maybe it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's a law. And those exist. We know those things exist. Yeah. But we have to live up to this. We have to do this. That's a perfect example of a place where it's like, okay, let's learn as much about this as we possibly can, how we are normally in compliance with this. Let's discover and bring all of the frustrations around that into focus. Let's follow those three things that you shared where we can. And there's things that, because we have to do it, how do we make it easy to almost automatically just be in compliance with this
make
thing?
It part of your day-to-day so it doesn't feel like an kind of job.
Exactly. How do we reduce those frustrations, minimize those frustrations, even to eliminate those things, as you said, or reframe this and get people to understand that I get it. We got to do it. So how do we make it as easy as possible? Almost just happen naturally. All right. So I can really appreciate the framework from a tactical sense. Mm-hmm. I think anyone listening out there can really easily see, there's action built in to all of that.
I always want my stuff to be, and I say it's operationally focused because, again, that's my background. That's what I know. I spend time with the doers of the business. It needs to be tangible things you can go out and try and do, because I think there's a lot of academic stuff. There's loads of books. There's loads of good stuff, which is great. Sometimes the piece that's missing is going, okay, but how do I do that? Like, what do I say? What do I do? How do I then do that in my, when I'm driving my forklift, how do I do that thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me. I love spending my time with folks that are more focused on exactly what you're describing. I spend time with a lot of folks that are like us, what I would consider practical folks maybe in this world. Yeah. Right. I'm certainly not an academic. that is not where I live. I like that stuff. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
I got to have more of that stuff. But what I really, really focus on personally, just as it sounds like you do, is, yeah, but how do we do that?
Like, yeah.
It makes sense to me, but how does that actually work in real life?
Yeah.
I think that's what people are looking for, at least the folks, again, my limited worldview, the folks that I spend time with. They like it, they love it, they got to have more of it.
But yeah.
I need to know what to do.
Yeah.
I really need to know the next steps to take.
Yeah.
You can tell me about the principles or this or that or the other, the tenets of safety differently or whatever we want to talk about until you're blue in the face. But none of that really means anything unless you help me understand the next steps I need to take as a leader, right? Yeah. As that person, as this executive, as insert whatever function here that we want to add in. So I really appreciate the operations focused nature of it. I genuinely do. I think that's powerful what you just described. That's cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, throw in a lasagna. But I think that's I like lasagna too. You would have had me at lasagna if it was lasagna. Yeah.
Quick pause. Want to drive meaningful change, improvement, and innovation within your organization? The Hop Nerd LLC can help. Head over to www.thehopnerd.com to book an initial consult, to request a quote, to get in touch, or explore the services that we provide. Services like engaging workshops on human and organizational performance and safety differently, engaging workshops on learning teams, operational learning, curiosity, and improvement. We also offer services such as strategy and planning support and post-event learning reviews, keynotes, public events, and more, all built on real-world experience, in the muck, in the mud, in the trenches kind of experience that we've gained doing this in real life, working internal to organizations, helping companies that we work with answer the question that sounds like, hey, this is great and all, but what now? How does this actually work? Yep, that's what I specialize in. You can learn more at thehopnerd.com or get in touch at thehopnerd@gmail.com. The Hop Nerd LLC can help you actually bring hop to life.
Okay, well, I want to ask you maybe our final kind of wrap-up question here, and it's a question that I've tended to ask since the very, very beginning of the podcast. I don't know how we wound up here, and it sounds a bit scary, and I've just kind of stuck with it, but it's this. Any last words? And what I mean by this is either things that we've already talked about or something brand new you want to insert here. What's something that you would really like to share with folks out there that are trying to do this stuff in real life, whether they call it hop or this or that or the other, that doesn't matter. Trying to bring about meaningful change in their work worlds, trying to maybe grow some of those better assumptions, just trying to do good work in this world and maybe put a bit of a positive dent in their organization and maybe beyond. What would you want to share with those folks? Anything you want to share?
I would say, and it links nicely to the word you keep using, which is better. So my new kind of mantra is, let's just be better. We don't have to be perfect. We just have to make incremental steps to be a little bit better. And actually, it kind of links. So if you choose to be better, you can then become a better person, because you don't just do this at work. If you start to live and breathe this, you're going to be talking about it in the pub. You're going to talk about it with your family. It changes the way you are. So become a better person. Then you become a better leader, because you then naturally lead people different. And then you can build better culture. So it's all linked. And it starts with individuals going, I'm going to be a bit better. Because my stuff and what Hop's trying to do is a high-performance culture, a high-performance team.
Yeah.
And sometimes that feels too far away or too intangible, but actually I can be a bit better at making it easy. I can be a bit better at creating a speak up culture. I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to make a few mistakes, but I can be a bit better. And it's an active choice to go, I'll be a bit better at this.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn when it don't work. And then I'm going to go, I'm going to be a bit better. So that in really simple terms, let's just choose to not just carry on doing the same old stuff we've done for 20 years. Let's go, I'm going to be a bit better at that and give something else a try.
I love the way you describe that, because I know for me personally, I find that many organizations are obsessed with this idea of perfection.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, like striving for perfection is cool and all, but maybe they're trying to move down this path, right, of human and organizational performance or something like that. And they get so obsessed with, well, if we can't do it exactly by this plan, if we can't do it exactly like this, and if it doesn't take us exactly here, they get so obsessed that they never even take the first step.
Yeah.
They get stuck sitting on a fence post.
Kind of walk to the horizon.
right? They get stuck kind of sitting on this fence post. And maybe this is a bit bad for me to say, I don't know, but if you're just going to sit on the fence post and plan for the next 6 years, you might be better off just not getting up on the fence post. Just stay over there for a while until you figure it out. Yeah. So I love this idea of us in the most positive sense of the way, lowering that barrier to entry, right? Yeah. I've kind of been obsessed with this idea of exactly what you describe, of it's not about perfection. It's not even about necessarily getting from point A to point B, although we probably should have a bit of a roadmap and all that stuff's good and all. But what we should really be thinking about is how do we make it a bit better than what it was yesterday? Yeah. That's it. That's it. That's all you can do. And to your kind of last add on there that I think is a huge part of that is you're going to get it wrong. And that's okay. Yeah. That means you started something. That's great.
Yeah.
Tweak, tune, adjust. Tweak, tune, adjust. Tweak, tune, adjust. And eventually we start to get it right. And it all comes from what you just said. Just a little bit better. Love it.
Because if we're so afraid of failure, we're never going to be successful.
No. Well, we're people. We're people. Sometimes we learn to get things right by getting them wrong. So wrong that we eventually learn to get them right.
That's who invented the light bulb. I think 10,000 failures he had before he got the light bulb to work. Right. Imagine if he gave up.
Yeah. Well, I tried once and my plan didn't work. Yeah. back to the oil lamp. Yeah. Well, I've got to tell you, or anybody out there listening, 100%. I'm going to get you to give them your contact information here in just a moment, but 10 out of 10 would recommend, if you need any help with some of this stuff that Becky just described, make sure that you reach out to her. I put you in the real deal bucket, Becky. And what I mean by that are folks out there actually bringing this stuff to life, not just talking about it. Yeah. I started doing that because people would ask me, hey, do you know anybody that specializes in this thing? And here's the real deal. This is the real deal person. And what I always mean by real deal is exactly that. Like, they're not just talking about it. They do it. They know they can help you. And so if you don't mind, share with folks out there how they can get a hold of you and all that different stuff.
Sure. So you can find me on LinkedIn. I spend a lot of time over there connecting with people. So it's Becky Ray, R-A-Y, on LinkedIn, or Culture Kick. Or you can get me on my website, which is www.culturekick.co.uk.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thanks for being here, Becky.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast and the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help of bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye. Are you looking for a handy-dandy, easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning-focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehotnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehotnerd.com/SP. Back to the show.